Chapter 19. In Fall. All sorts of festivities had been planned for us hearty heroes, but their execution was somewhat muted by doom and gloom and the regular infall of meteors. A lot of expensive liquor was spilled at a congressional reception when a boulder the size of a grand piano redesigned a shopping mall in nearby Maryland, a town improbably named Rockville. By the time the sound reached us, it had attenuated to where it was only as loud as a landmine going off in the next room. I dove under a table and found two younger people had beaten me there, so much for combat reflexes. A good place to be when the chandeliers are raining glass, though, and the girl I had landed on was agreeably soft. Of course, all the congratulatory speeches had to be rewritten with appropriate funereality, and I came to dread the cognitive dissonance that united them all in clumsiness, as if good things and bad things couldn't happen at the same time. I suppose that if one is to stay sane as a soldier, that incongruent congruence always has to be there in some part of your mind. No matter how terrible are the things you have seen and done, in another country there is room for happiness and friendship, beauty and love. American soldiers in their war against Vietnam had a bleak catchphrase for when the worst happened: "Don't mean nothing." I heard about that when I was a teenage soldier generations later, and knew exactly what it meant. Nihilism is the soldier's ultimate armor. Soldiering and the memory of Gehenna might have made it easier for me to accept the huge cataclysm of the other's revenge. Easier not to surrender to anger. Don't mean nothing. There was a huge amount of anger in the air, understandably, and frustration. A profoundly powerful enemy who is absolutely beyond reach now and for any foreseeable future. If the moon's destruction had only deprived us of spaceflight, most people wouldn't see it as a tragedy. For many people, space is just an expensive playground for scientists and the military. Keep that money and brain power at home. But modern civilization needs satellites. Most communication and entertainment goes by optical fiber, with the satellites a backup, except in primitive countries. But GPS devices are in the heart of every car and plane. Big city traffic, dependent on computer control, froze solid. Non-essential flights were grounded. Computers died. Of course, we get some fallout from that. Even among the sophisticated government and news workers who are our daily companions, there is the undercurrent of blame. And it's not undeserved if someone does have to be blamed. We were the only people who could have done something out where the others live, and all we did was deliver the message, the lie, that precipitated this disaster. The plain fact that we could have been the aggressors, the kamikaze option, is generally known and widely discussed. From one very understandable point of view, we should not have considered any other course of action. It's interesting that among our crew, only the Martians thought the kamikaze option was a reasonable idea, but to them death is an unremarkable event. It's not as if we humans couldn't do the math and apply the logic. What if we had all been Shinto or fundamentalist Muslim or Christian extremists? We might have just as universally discarded the idea of negotiation and blasted full speed ahead toward the enemy planet. That might be alien to our culture, but it's not alien to human nature. In the 20th and 21st centuries, suicide attacks have often been used as a practical response to an imbalance in technology. There were uneven results. The handful of suicide pilots in America's 9/11 had a stupendous kill ratio, but the 5,000 Japanese kamikazes only sank 36 ships. In both cases, though, it was an understandable military sacrifice when the enemy's technological base made them unbeatable by conventional methods. And their situations were nothing compared to the technological imbalance between the human race and the others. Should we feel guilty for not making the ultimate sacrifice? Do we deserve to be condemned as cowards? Having been there at the time, I'd say no. Those with the benefit of hindsight may feel differently. There have been threats on our lives. Our public appearances have two cadres of bodyguards, I found out. Armed soldiers in uniform surrounding us, but twice as many in civilian clothes circulating in the audience. So I was relieved when the celebrations were abruptly cancelled after 2 days. We didn't get to return on Air Force One. Would never see the president again, but took a Spartan private jet back to California, where we'd left Snowbird. She was more or less hidden for the time being. As unpopular as the six of us were with the angry populace, we could only imagine how they would react to a Martian. Alien tools of the others. She would eventually be moved to a sanctuary in Siberia, where conditions were more Mars-like. A foundation had been set up there when the quarantine was lifted, and now it would support as well as study the 5 or 6 Martians marooned on Earth. She would find edible Martian food growing there, and the company of her own kind. But she wanted to say goodbye to us first, and take a swim in the ocean. She would get that. But not much more.